How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It is the second biggest pay-per-view of the year this afternoon for World Wrestling Entertainment. The 40-man over-the-top Royal Rumble. We're going to be talking about that match in detail today. We'll be talking about all of the matches on the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. And, of course, later on today, in fact, immediately following the show, not only does the pay-per-view kick off, but you can head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer live running play-by-play on the front page of the website. Who enters when? What are the big surprises? What are the big names? Who gets eliminated? And who wins the entire thing? It'll all be up at WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to talk about a bunch of different possibilities today. Some big names that are confirmed for the Royal Rumble, including a couple that have screwed up TNA's plans. They are supposed to be doing the big angle where they debut on Thursday night, but several of they are debuting with WWE. And we'll talk about some ideas as to why, who those names are, and a lot more coming up a little bit later on. Last night was the Strikeforce show from San Jose with Nick Diaz versus Mr. Cyborg in the main event. It was a fun show. Talk about all of the matches. What made the show different from previous Strikeforce events in a positive way? They made some changes, and we'll talk about that later on in the program. A lot of big events this weekend. Wrestle Reunion took place in Los Angeles last night. A big PWG show taking place as well, in which Terry Funk and Roddy Piper, of all people, on the show over the weekend, stole the show. Talk about that. Plus, the Dragon Gate USA internet pay-per-views. They didn't experiment this week. Two internet pay-per-views in 2 days. We'll talk about those shows, where you can see them, where you can check them out right now, in fact, and a lot more. One of the biggest stars of the last 5 years has signed with WWE. We'll talk about that, why he signed, why more guys from his company and elsewhere in his country might be coming to WWE. It's a very interesting story and may play into WrestleMania and some other plans that they have going forward. So much news, couldn't even get over all of it here in this preview. So when we come back, we'll start talking about the Royal Rumble, and then we shall talk more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It is the Royal Rumble this afternoon. Royal Rumble Sunday, and I've mentioned this before, got a lot of friends that don't really follow pro wrestling anymore, and you never really hear from them until Royal Rumble Sunday comes along. And then the people start going, where's the show this year? Who's getting the show? So there's still a lot of interest in the Royal Rumble. And, Mike, are you looking forward to today's show?
Oh, of course, yeah. The Royal Rumble and WrestleMania are still the two things that, unless, I mean, it would take something pretty, you know, or a big catastrophe to ruin both of those things. They're changing it this year, 40 men in instead of 30. Obviously, it just means more geeks. But there is also the possibility that you get some surprises, because that's one of the things growing up watching the Royal Rumble my entire life that I always loved was, you know, the honky-tonk man always being the greatest example of the guy that would just, like, pop up and having guys like that. And they're going to have that this year, it looks like. So, you know, that makes people happy. And, again, you know, the whole thing, the rest of the card, obviously, is, you know, and there's not much of one, is building towards, you know, other stuff leading into to WrestleMania. But, you know, as long as the Rumble is the Rumble, people are always going to order it. It's always going to be the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, because it is the lead-up into WrestleMania. And it's just, again, it's the thing you talked about this week with Todd Martin on the show. People have drinking games and pools, and even WWE busts out, you know, stats, even though they may be wrong on their broadcasts of, you know, shortest time in a Royal Rumble with Santino and all that sort of stuff. So it's something that's always generated interest, and it always will.
Let's run down the list of guys. We've got 34 guys, and we've got two guys not on the list that are going to be at the show tonight and likely working the Rumble. And as I read a name, I don't want to do a percentage deal because it'll add up to about 900%. But just say, likely, unlikely, or no chance of this person, in your opinion, winning the Rumble. Alberto Del Rio.
He falls into the likely category. You know, if you're thinking, you know, 75% or higher chance, yeah, I would say Alberto Del Rio, because he's one of the few.
I would agree. R-Truth.
No chance.
Rey Mysterio.
You'd have to put him in the middle, but I would see, realistically, no chance, but I'll go ahead and put him in the middle for argument's sake.
I'll put him in a possibility chance. John Cena.
Good chance. Really good chance. Outside of Alberto, one of, you know, probably the best chance would, you know, the way that it looks like it might be Miz and Cena at WrestleMania.
I will say quite likely. CM Punk.
A possibility. Again, obviously he would be a threat to win it. You know, him being in there near the end or something like that, it would be believable, but I just don't think it'll happen.
David Otunga.
-5, whatever that could possibly be as far as a negative, that's what it is.
Husky Harris.
No chance.
Michael McGillicuddy.
No chance.
Michael McGillicuddy has less of a chance than David Otunga, I believe. King Sheamus.
A possibility, although, again, you know, there's a million one things that we're thinking could happen with Sheamus. Most of them involve Triple H directly. So, you know, it is a possibility, but I don't think it'll happen.
Daniel Bryan.
No chance.
John Morrison.
A possibility, but realistically, I don't think so.
Ted DiBiase.
No chance.
I've changed. I think I said on the Todd show that I gave him like a 0.5%. I've moved that down to no chance. Darren Young.
No chance.
Will Darren Young get the award for the shortest time in the Rumble this year?
I don't know. You got Primo there again.
That's true. David Hart Smith.
No chance.
Primo.
No chance.
Tyson Kidd.
No chance.
William Regal.
No chance.
Yoshitatsu.
No chance.
Zack Ryder.
No chance.
What a hell of a list we've got here.
Oh, by the way, you skipped Mark Henry. No chance.
Where is Mark Henry? Oh, yeah, I did skip Mark Henry. No chance. Ezekiel Jackson.
No chance.
Heath Slater.
No chance.
Justin Gabriel.
Called DJ Gabriel by Edge on SmackDown to bring back a warm and fuzzy memory this week. No chance.
Wade Barrett.
A possibility or perception of a possibility, but it would realistically think no chance.
Mason Ryan.
No chance.
Jack Swagger.
No chance.
Drew McIntyre.
No chance.
Chris Masters.
No chance.
JTG.
No chance.
Kane.
No chance.
Kofi Kingston.
We'll put him in that possibility category, but realistically, no chance.
Big Show.
No chance.
Santino Marella.
No chance.
Vladimir Kozlov.
You know what? Now, this one should fall under possibility, okay? Because
Tell me more.
We all know in professional wrestling, for a match to go well, it takes cooperation. And if Vladimir Kozlov can't negotiate the ropes, it is a possibility that he will somehow not fall out of the ring and somehow flail enough and knock others out instead.
Interesting. Now, there are two spots that... Actually, there are six spots have not been filled, but it's believed that two of them will be filled by Booker T and Kevin Nash. Yes, Booker T and Kevin Nash. They're in Boston right now, and they're going to be at the Rumble. Now, I suppose there's a possibility they will not actually be in the Rumble, but my guess would be, why have a Rumble with 40 men in surprise slots if you're not going to actually put them in the Rumble? So my guess would be they're going in. I would guess that Booker T is there... There's talk he might do some commentary. It is Atlanta WrestleMania. They could decide they're going to put him in the WWE Hall of Fame. Same with Kevin Nash, or Kevin Nash could be the guy to induct Shawn Michaels. I mean, there are a lot of different ways this could play into WrestleMania, but my guess would be that they are both in the Rumble. My guess would be that neither is going to win. However, let me ask you this question, Mike. Let's say that we've got 36 men so far. That means there's four mystery slots. That means that the winner could either be one of the four mystery slots, or it could be somebody that we've already mentioned here. And what if I were to tell you that the idea, or one of the ideas, is that the winner of the Royal Rumble this year could be a surprise and not end up getting the championship match at WrestleMania? If I were to tell you that, who would you pick as the winner?
Well, Cody Rhodes having to pull out, although I think that would be a ludicrous idea. But, and again, the only reason I would say this is because of the massive amount of beatings he's taken and the way they've gone out of their way to dismiss him. Dolph Ziggler would actually make some sense there, too. I mean, if it's not Triple H, and it's probably not going to be, because that would be a no-brainer, too. If it's Triple H, and they actually do a quote-unquote surprise thing, which, you know, is a lot, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with it at this point, but I know a lot of people think that's a ludicrous idea. If it is him, yeah, I would think he would win it.
Interesting with Cody is, funny you should mention him, when WWE updated their list on the website, he's not on it.
Yes, on SmackDown, apparently he did an interview with his back to the camera with memories of Prince, or not, sorry, not Prince, but King Iokea. He didn't want to show his face because Rey Mysterio deviated his septum and broke his nose, and he is no longer dashing, and he cannot be in the Rumble under doctor's orders.
Oh my God. Well, he still may be in. You never know. So, yes, my prediction is still Dolph Ziggler. I still predict that Dolph loses to Edge somehow, and Vicky gives him the number 40 slot, and he goes on to win the entire thing. Or maybe they'll still do that, but he doesn't win the entire thing. But I see him being added to this Rumble here, and, you know, they could put others in as well. I think Lance Storm predicted that Randy Orton RKOs Alex Riley and then takes his slot and ends up winning the Rumble. You know, there are a lot of...
Riley's not even in it, too. You have the four guys in the title matches. Riley's not in, the Usos. I mean, they could throw a swerve and have some bums in there or go that direction with, you know, one of the main event guys not being in it.
That's true. Riley is not in it yet. But, again, there are still six slots left, four if you consider Booker T and Kevin Nash as participants this year. So that is the big Royal Rumble match. 40 guys, I'd say about a minute and a half between entries. It's actually random. It's been random for years. They'll say a number, but guys come in when it's time, as they say. So we're going to talk about the other three matches that have been announced so far for the show. Yes, it's a Royal Rumble and three other matches, which could mean that if the other title matches don't go too long, this could end up being a very, very long Royal Rumble. Or they could add something at the last minute to the show. But we're going to talk about that when we come back. We've also got a ton of news to discuss from all over the world. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're discussing the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, which takes place immediately after this show goes off the air. And Mike, we've run down the participants in the big Royal Rumble matchup. That leads us to the other three matches on the show, including The Miz and Randy Orton for the WWE title. What is your prediction for this match?
I'm saying The Miz. I'm going with the faith that they give Miz a clear-cut win. Obviously, there's going to be some sort of chicanery at the end or something like that. I think we talked about it last week. Realistically, I could see a, you know, Riley interferes, you know, Miz almost gets the win, Orton kicks out, and then, you know, but he's somehow weakened enough where Miz does get a clear-cut victory, no matter, you know, how rough it is up until the end, but he comes out of it with a clear-cut victory because that would be the only thing to me that would make any sense.
You think Miz is going to get a clear-cut victory over Randy Orton?
Well, I'm hoping for it because, again, I don't... Okay, so if Orton beats him, okay, I guess, you know, that's fine, I guess. But why? You know, the Miz act is working, you know, at least I think it is. Obviously, you know, he's not... you know, super over as far as his matches go or anything, but I mean, I wouldn't see, well, why not continue to keep building him up and going along? I just, that one's hard for me to fathom when I would think you would need him for WrestleMania.
I am predicting not a clear-cut victory for Miz. I think that he'll, something will happen. They've just gone so out of their way to protect Randy Orton, and they've so not gone out of their way to protect The Miz that I cannot even conceive of an idea where The Miz would get a clear-cut victory over Randy Orton. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, obviously they should, but I don't have faith in them doing so.
Well, how painful is it that the two heavyweight championship matches on the card, you look at, you know, just the bastardization of the guys that are in there.
Especially Dolph Ziggler.
Gee, I mean, yeah, and that's just, And again, that's why I don't know if you want to go through your story again of how you would have Ziggler win it, because I've been thinking Alberto Del Rio, and again, I know some of it may have been a smokescreen because of how much he's been on, and I guess one of the possibilities you could add for a title match tonight or something for tonight if you wanted to would be Alberto and Kofi Kingston for the Intercontinental title or something like that. But your thing with Ziggler actually makes complete sense because it's something that WWE has done before where, you know, it's the mentality of, you know, here a guy is, you know, we don't want you to believe it or anything like that. We're going to beat him down and all of this other stuff and this ass-backwards way of thinking. And then, surprise, you know, he would be the one that would win it, and it would make sense.
That is the other title match on the show, Edge versus Dolph Ziggler. The stipulations added on SmackDown: if Edge uses the spear on Ziggler, he loses the title. So there will be no spears in this match. And yeah, I predict
there are only 100 of them on SmackDown to make him look even more like a geek after he cleanly pinned him.
And an RKO.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figure based on the way that they book that Dolph either wins this match or he wins the Rumble. And my guess,
there's no way. I think that him winning the Rumble makes more sense to me than him winning this match, because I mean, how impotent, and granted, I know they've done this with, you know, a million and one other guys, but how impotent if he just goes out and, you know, gets a, obviously you'd have to cheat to get a crappy win over Edge and win the title. I just think it would just, you know, I think apathy would just reign.
And we've got Natalya versus Lay Cool in a 2-on-1 handicap match built around Lay Cool calling someone fat, which is the exact same angle they did last year at the Royal Rumble.
They like doing it. Again, Natalya, not fat, much like many of the times that they do this. So, you know, going back to the lowest thing again, surprisingly on SmackDown, they had Caitlyn come out with Kelly. And actually beat up Lay Cool for a while. There was no Natalya, no mention whatsoever, and I can't even remember if they mentioned the fact they had a Divas Championship match until the very end of the thing. It was more a setup to have Kelly and Drew McIntyre's story continue.
How was SmackDown this week? I haven't had a chance to see the show yet.
It was down from what it has been over the first couple weeks of the year. I mean, you know, it just, again, because the thing was bookended by Ziggler getting demolished, Orton came out to talk to Vicky. Ziggler comes out to weekly defend her honor and defend the show's honor, saying it's his show, and he gets RKO'd. He gets laid out at the end with about 100 million spears, and what was in the middle of that was that Cody promo, which was good. The Alberto had a little Royal Rumble, mini Royal Rumble thing where Kane had, he beat up two geeks. Kane came out, tried to toss him out, which led up to Kofi and Rey Jr., and then they had a tag match there that Rey Mysterio and Kofi won. Kofi got the pin over Alberto when Kane walked out on him. So it wasn't a bad show. I mean, it wasn't awful. It was not the greatest go-home show in the world whatsoever. And really, it's been down from the first couple weeks of the year.
I'm going to send you something here really quick. Load this picture up here. It is the Royal Rumble poster. And looks like we've got Randy Orton in the upper left-hand corner, and there's The Big Show, and Rey Mysterio, Cena, Miz, and who is that in the bottom left-hand corner?
Hold on here. It's not opening up for me, of course. Here we go. Bottom left-hand corner. I don't know, but he's angry.
Who is that?
That is a very generic picture right there.
I have no idea who that man is. And who's the second guy from the top left? Who are these people?
I have no,
obviously
this is
the,
one of
the
honestly even, honestly this is really one of, and they're usually very good with this stuff, one of the worst posters I've seen in a while.
Yes, if you go to I know the poster's up on Wikipedia, you can click on it, but I know that the top row has Orton, Ray, and Big Show, and then a mystery man who I cannot for the life of me figure out who that is. And then the second row has Miz, Cena, I believe that's Drew McIntyre.
Drew, yeah.
And R-Truth. Then we've got Sheamus and Morrison. And then we've got Mystery Man, Kane, Kofi, and Alberto Del Rio. So I have no idea who that is. It kind of looks like Triple H.
Sort of. It's got Rob Conway always had that same sort of face, too. And obviously we know it's not Rob Conway. But, you know, I have no idea. I have no idea who these people are.
Maybe it is. Maybe he's going to win the Conway.
If the music comes back, I'm all for it.
What do you predict the buy rate's going to be for the show this year? How many people are going to purchase the Rumble? I won't even ask for a specific number. More or less people than bought it last year?
You know, believe it or not, I actually think it's going to be... I think it's going to be about the same. I really think it'll be about the same, maybe even slightly more, just in spite of itself, which will probably, if that were to actually happen, and it may be a whole lot of a pipe dream, but if that's actually to happen, I can't imagine what their brains are going to explode with happiness if that's the case. But, I mean, honestly, just because of what's been around, and there hasn't been any boxing pay-per-views, you know, it wasn't Edgar's pay-per-view with Maynard, wasn't huge. And again, the 40 people, you know, rumors out there about Booker T and Kevin Nash and who could possibly be in. I could see the thing being about the same. I think if there's going to be a dip of one of the two at the beginning of the year, it's going to be next month.
I'm running down the list of names that are in the Rumble already, and I still have no idea who those two people are right there. That is baffling to me. Maybe
that's
I'll post
Cody,
it on our board.
Cody up there. No, that's not Cody.
I'm going to post it on our board and see if anybody can come up with an answer. All right, while I'm busy messing around on the internet, let's talk a little bit about some of the other news from WWE. Stone Cold Steve Austin is returning. He is going to be in charge of the Tough Enough show, which is returning to the USA Network. And what are your thoughts on Steve Austin being involved?
That's awesome. It's about as awesome as it can possibly get. As far as having, you know, what's the biggest and best name you could possibly have to be on that show, and it's Stone Cold. And again, I'm not sure exactly the role he's going to be playing. I mean, as far as, is he just going to be kind of a host? Is he really going to be in there as a, you know, as a trainer and a Bill DeMott type or something like that? But I mean, just him on there is going to be great, and it's going to be great for USA too. Obviously, loves him to death.
Posting this right now, second from the top in the top, or second from the left in the top row, bottom left, bottom row. Who are these men? All right, we'll see how quickly before we get an answer here. It's kind of sad that I don't know this, and maybe they're just generic people. Maybe they didn't have enough people, so they just got, you know, folks working for WWE to stand there and look mean.
It's like the old TNT studio audience.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. The Tough Enough, Austin is coming back, and you know, obviously they need ratings here. I was talking about this last night with Dave. I guess I understand why, because USA is looking for ratings from 8 to 11, but you know, as far as just the best time for the show, if you disregard that, to me it's 11 p.m. because you've got the people that are going to watch it when Raw is over, and you cannot help but remember it's on every week. And the three-hour Raws that start an hour early at 8 o'clock, you know, a good 25% or more of viewers always forget it's on at 8 o'clock. So, to me, that's not the ideal time, but they are looking for primetime ratings numbers. That's why the show is being brought back in the first place. And so, I guess that is the reasoning behind 8 p.m.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, to me, it works far better at 11 o'clock, too. I mean, that's the success of all those shows seem to happen when they go on afterwards. And, if I was USA, I'd have it on at 8, but I'd have it on at 11, too, or at least, I don't know. I just, 8 o'clock, everything always, nothing ever works at 8 o'clock. It never works, so I don't know. Maybe they actually move it to 11, depending on what the ratings are when it comes in, but I would think for at least the first couple of weeks, people are going to be all over it just because of Stone Cold and just for the general interest factor.
Second in command behind Vince McMahon, Donna Goldsmith, is leaving WWE. And we don't know why. It was just kind of a throwaway line that she would be leaving the company effective the end of February. And she has been with the company for over a decade. She spearheaded a lot of different things. She worked in merchandising when it was the strongest arm of the company. She was influential in the move to PG, which got them the deal with Mattel, which has been very lucrative for them. And this came shortly after it was announced that the Christmas quarter was not going to end up doing all that well. And we don't have the final numbers yet, but we will soon. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. It's a huge story. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It's Royal Rumble Sunday, and for all the latest news on the Rumble, including live play-by-play, you can head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave is going to be running down the show as it happens at WrestlingObserver.com for free on the front page. And, of course, there's a ton of stuff up there. If you love this show, we've mentioned this many times, if you love this show and you only hear it once a week, you are missing out. Last week, I'd have to take a little while here to add all of this up, but I know that on one day in particular, I did 3 shows and 4 hours of content in one day, and that's just my stuff. We have a good half dozen other radio programs that are produced by others on the website, including the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, which Mike Sempervivi is one half of, along with Adam Summers, who in the UFC, the MMA, what's it called? What's the Cubs fans deal? The MMA pool, the MMA fantasy league?
Yes, Joe Gagne's the initial or the first ever original idea, MMA fantasy deal, yes.
That's right.
I think that's actually technically what it's called.
Joe Gagne's. Yeah, Adam Summers, some... I'm trying to think of a proper word to use for this. Woeful picks, I guess, would be the best.
But well, yeah, questionable picks.
You can't win them all. But the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, fine program. It's all up at WrestlingObserver.com. I did some math recently. We have over 5,000 hours of audio in our archives. And that means if you signed up today, not only to get all of the new shows, we do about 15 to 20 new shows a week, around 20 to 25 hours of content. I think actually there's more new content that goes up on our site a week than goes up on WWE Classics On Demand. Think about that. And unlike Classics On Demand, it does not disappear after a month. It's all up there forever. So if you sign up today, $10.99 a month at WrestlingObserver.com, you can go to the archives and listen to 5,000 hours worth of audio. Not only shows covering the news, such as we do today, but shows that do interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Steve Austin, Bret Hart, we just had Terry Funk on this week, Bruno Sammartino has been on, Chris Jericho. In fact, Jericho's going to be on in a couple of weeks again. It's a great website, great value for the money. You will not regret it. WrestlingObserver.com.
And unlike Classics, we don't edit our history when Carl Stern
does
one of his fine shows.
No, you can go back 3 years and listen to my predictions and either say, wow, Brian is on top of things, or wow, what an idiot. What stupid predictions. Now let's talk a little bit about Donna Goldsmith. What are your thoughts on her leaving the company? Is this strictly due to the fact that the numbers are not looking good, particularly in the presumably the merchandise division, since it was bad numbers around the Christmas season? Or just do you feel, been there long enough, it's time to move on?
Yeah, it may just be time for a change. It's going to be interesting to see the call when they release the numbers on February 10th and just... as more comes out about this, because to me, this is obviously by far the biggest story of 2011. You know, it can't be understated enough. I mean, this was the chief operating officer of the company and somebody that has been there for, it's been damn near 10 years now. She came in as the, what did she start as? I think she started up as, I believe, the vice president of just like consumer products, which is basically, I think, like sales and marketing. Essentially in July of 2000. So she has been there operating at a high level for quite some time and ended up being second in command and ended up overseeing live and TV events, digital, WWE studios with all the movies, you know, consumer products. She got to, you know, help to negotiate the toy license with Mattel. She was the one that's, you know, helped to push expansion into India, and they ran the China shows. They want to get into Brazil and Russia. This is a big deal. Now, why it is, she has been there a long time. Did she get sick of Vince? Did Vince get sick of her? Is she looking for just a new outlet? I mean, she's worked for SWAT. She's worked for Revlon. She's worked for the NBA. It's not like a woman in her position wouldn't have options. So maybe it is just time for a change at a time where, because of some of those deals, it's going to be interesting to see what toy sales were and what DVD sales were in that fourth quarter. Assumingly, they were down. Pay-per-view was down. Everything was seemingly down, and the movies haven't panned out the way that I don't think anybody would have liked. Now, I don't think you can put that on her. That's more of a Vince thing of wanting to create movies. But, again, it just may be time for a change, but it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of this because it is such a big, big deal.
On our Royal Rumble poster deal here, We've got some interesting answers. This person thinks that the man in the second from the top is Dolph Ziggler. I don't see that.
Yes.
You think that's Dolph?
I think that might actually be Dolph. You got to now picture in that, because it looks like the, you know, they actually, it looks like it's torn pictures that they've plastered onto this one picture, so you can't see the blonde hair or anything, but the, you see nose and the crappy white smile, that could possibly be Dolph.
And they're also thinking that the bottom left is either Hornswoggle or Edge.
See, I was thinking Edge, but God, no, they couldn't put Hornswoggle on there, could they?
You'd think not. I suppose it could be Edge. Kind of hard to see without the hair. I remember that Edge many years ago, you know, he always talked about, you know, they would try and push him as this good-looking guy, and he would always say that it's the hair. You cut my hair off, and I am an ugly, ugly man. And this is, in fact, a picture of a man where you cannot see his hair. And, yeah, that guy's not making the cover of GQ down there in the bottom left-hand corner.
He will not be happy to be compared to Hornswoggle. Just wasn't sure if that was you or Hornswoggle, Ed. Sorry, buddy.
Someone else has predicted Vladimir Kozlov. Don't think it's Kozlov.
Not too much facial hair for it to be the cause.
Yeah, it is. So I guess we'll continue to... We'll continue to monitor this. One person here notes, a bunch of nameless faces, and the response is, yes, completely indistinguishable. So, there you go. All right, another huge story coming out of WWE, potentially a gigantic story, is the biggest star in Mexico today. The only luchador to ever win Wrestler of the Year in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards. He is heading to WWE. It is on the cover of the newest issue of Super Luchas. He signed with WWE. He is apparently heading to Florida Championship Wrestling. Mystico is on his way. It is a fascinating story in the sense that he has negotiated with WWE before. He's done dark matches for them before. They've liked him. He has stayed with CMLL through it all. Of late, he had been negotiating with AAA. And, you know, CMLL, I don't want to say that I don't think they left on bad terms, because with CMLL, if you give notice, you've left on good terms. If you just walk out, those are usually bad terms. But, you know, I think a couple of days ago, they may have officially suspended him for some reason, probably as a result of this. But he is heading to WWE, and I guess the idea is that for a long time, luchadors did not want to head to WWE because, you know, luchadors, with the exception of Rey Mysterio, were treated very badly. They rode riding lawnmowers, for example. They were treated like...
Masks pulled off.
Treated like geeks. And I'm not counting Eddie Guerrero, by the way. I'm talking guys from Mexico that worked full-time in lucha promotions that tried to make it in WWE. The first thing they wanted El Santo to do, for Christ's sake. El Santo is the biggest star in the history of professional wrestling. And I know that some of you will listen to that and say, no, it's Hulk Hogan. No, in fact, it's not. If you go down to Mexico and you read lists of, for example, who are the 10 most influential people in the history of Mexico? People. Not sports figures, not wrestlers, people. The most influential figures in the history of Mexico, El Santo is listed. There are statues built for this man. There is nobody who has been a bigger star in the history of wrestling than El Santo, with the possible exception of Ricky Dozan in Japan. Now, with all that said, the first thing WWE wanted to do when they brought up El Santo for their Super Astros, I believe was the name of the program in the mid-90s, first thing they wanted him to do was unmask. Yeah. So anyway, for many, many years, luchadors did not want to go to WWE. And apparently the feeling now is that Alberto Del Rio, as Dos Caras Jr., was not particularly over in Mexico. He was not really all that great. And he was hired by WWE. Everybody thought he would flounder. He showed very little charisma when he was down there in Florida Championship Wrestling. Of course, they immediately took his mask off as well. And he has become a big star who, when the day is over, may have won the Royal Rumble. So the success of Alberto Del Rio has resulted in guys like Mystico going, you know, maybe I can make it up there as well. And Rey Mysterio Jr. obviously is getting on in years. He's all beat up. He's banged up. He will not be around forever. And the idea is, well, we need a new Rey Mysterio, and Mystico may be the man. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
If they do it right, little kids are going to lose their minds to have another Rey Mysterio type. And I know how that, you know, may sound, but, you know, obviously it's not like Mystico is going to walk in, win the Royal Rumble, and main event WrestleMania defeating John Cena. No, he's going to be in that Mysterio role, and it's just, every time he was on, every time I had a chance or my family had a chance to watch CMLL on there, when they would do the, you know, the little vignette at the beginning before the match of him praying and all that stuff, and then he came, you know, went out there and, you know, would hit all of his, it was just, he was incredible. I mean, he was the wrestler of the year, a box office sensation. It's, I guess, slipped off a little bit now, but, I mean, it's a big, big deal. And I think it's just, again, don't change, if they don't have to, don't change the name, don't change the mask, because he stands out. I mean, you know, the, as dumb as it sounds, the aesthetics of the shiny white mask with the gold and you know, the whole outfit, I mean, I think it will get over huge. Huge for, you know, again, he won't be as popular as Rey Mysterio, but I think as an addition to him, people are going to love it.
Well, we shall see how it goes. It is, you know, it's a big blow, obviously, to CMLL. It's not going to kill the company or anything like that. I mean, they're busy trying to create new, young, high-flying stars. But a very interesting move, and we'll see how it goes. Obviously, the benefit to Alberto Del Rio is he's... you know, he's got a great personality without the mask, and he speaks perfect English. And sometimes he acts like he doesn't, but he speaks English very, very well. And, you know, Mystico is going to need some work. So,
Brian, I got a question for you, actually, because you talked to Dr. Lucha a lot and everything. And in the last show, you discussed it, and it's been, you know, brought up on CNBC and a lot of the news channels because of the narco wars that are taking place in Mexico. Just your opinion, can you actually see, because of the situation down there, could you actually see some wrestlers coming up here to work, no matter what position it is, just to get out of there for a little while?
Well, it would depend on the wrestler. I mean, you know, if you got to look at, like, even with business bad, I mean, there's still a lot of guys getting a lot of dates. And if you know, you're basically trying to come to America to make similar money or work similar dates, I mean, you know, if you can't get work with WWE or TNA, you're going to be struggling to make any dates, and it doesn't make financial sense. So I don't know. I guess it's possible, but, you know, the narco wars have been going on for a while, and I think if it were going to happen, it would have happened by now.
Okay, I was curious about that. I mean, obviously, people are trying to, like, Lucha Libre USA, and there's, you know, I guess some things you could do, but, yeah, I guess it would have to be funded pretty well or have a real reason for guys to come up if they are being able to make as much money or at least make more than enough money to stay comfortable.
I wanted to do an email question or a couple of them here very quickly before we have to go to our next break. This person says, what are some of the negatives and positives we will see in the WWE product as Goldsmith departs? Will there be a noticeable change in what we see on the screen? I don't know. It depends. As noted, she was heavily behind the PG direction. She will be gone. There's possibility that they will move away from that. But at the same time, you know, they still have a Mattel deal. It's not like she left and the Mattel deal is gone. Ratings they're steady, but business is not what it was. In fact, we could talk about this a little bit later. The numbers that are coming out are not good at all, and they may be looking at a change, and it could be to move away from PG. We shall see. We'll talk about it after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Before the break, we had a question about Donna Goldsmith and whether there is a possibility that perhaps WWE could move away from the PG rating after she leaves. Could they go more more hardcore, I guess, more into something similar to what we saw in the mid to late 90s? And Mike, what are your thoughts?
You know, the J.P. Morgan Global Media Technology in conference in Boston last year, she torched TNA for the the guts and gore type of thing, and you know, she really laid the hammer down hard on TNA and carried the company line. And as you stated, she was big in the PG direction. So yeah, I mean, it is a legitimate possibility that we could see a move. And it wouldn't be a dramatic move to like PG-13, which is actually quite the big jump when you consider Mattel and other types of advertising campaigns and things like that. But as we've seen, you know, with people poking fun at it, with like John Cena, as we've seen with some other things, as far as just getting a little bit looser about some things, you could maybe see the envelope starting to just creep just a little bit more. But again, it won't be dramatic right away. It can't be dramatic right away.
I'd also like to mention, I've said this a million times, I'm going to say it again. If you think WWE is boring and sucks right now, it's not because it's PG. And if WWE goes back to PG-13, there's still going to be some really boring and some really, really bad programming. It's not the rating. It just happened that during a period of great change in the industry and some really, really big stars and a lot of excitement, it happened to not be PG. But there have been periods where pro wrestling has been very PG and it has been awesome. And there have been periods where pro wrestling was not PG at all and it has completely sucked. And the issues today have very little to do with the PG aspect of the show. They have issues to do with the people that are writing the show and Vince McMahon and the comedy and everything else. And the comedy may be more risque, but it's still going to be bad comedy. We're going to head to the top of the hour break. In about 7 minutes, we shall be back. We'll get into more news, more emails. There's so much stuff to talk about today on Royal Rumble Sunday. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Talking about the Royal Rumble, the second biggest WWE pay-per-view of the year. We spent most of the first hour talking about that. Sure, we'll be talking about it later on in this hour as well. And I wanted to make mention this past weekend, Wrestle Reunion in Los Angeles. And I was considering going. I didn't end up going. I should have gone. The PWG show last night was apparently awesome. They had a Legends Royal Rumble that came down to Roddy Piper and Terry Funk in the end, their first ever meeting, believe it or not. And they stole the show. Funk ended up getting down on his knees and saying, "Let's bow down here in prayer for all of our fallen comrades." And he asked Roddy Piper to lower his head. And when Roddy Piper lowered his head, he hit him with the mic. And he began beating him repeatedly and screaming, "Amen!" And he threw him out and beat him all over the place in the crowd and threw him back into the ring. And they had a brawl. And finally, Roddy Piper sent him over the top rope to win. And it was said to be completely awesome. And the show started at 8:45, ended up at 1:30 a.m. But apparently all of the matches, or at least all of the top matches, were great. And I'm so sad I didn't go. It sounded awesome.
Unlike a IWA Mid-South 4.5-hour show, this sounds like one I actually want to see. PWG shows are good anyway, and it's one of those things when people complain about WWE and other places, and, you know, wrestling stinks. And, you know, in 2011, it's not that hard to actively seek some other stuff out between DVD and online and iPay-per-views and things like that, and I cannot wait to see this DVD because it sounded absolutely awesome. And I guess the main event was even more awesome, too, with Claudio and El Generico.
Yeah, and for more great iPay-per-views, Dragon Gate USA ran 2 this past weekend. I have not seen them yet, but I plan on watching them later on today. You can check them out at GoFightLive.tv. Got a lot of good reviews about the show so far, so maybe head up there and check it out. They're none too expensive. GoFightLive.tv. We're going to be back in just a moment talking more pro wrestling. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, have you got a chance to check out many of the Dragon Gate USA iPay-per-views?
I have. Well, mostly not the iPay-per-views. I haven't seen these yet, but I've seen the other regular pay-per-views. And I got to be honest, I know that they were kind of out of sequence the last time around, but I'm a big fan of putting this on there, I mean, obviously, you can tell by the 2011 Wrestling Observer Awards and just the general thought of people like Ricochet and Jon Moxley and guys like that. Obviously, something is working. There's some buzz working somewhere. And I think Dragon Gate USA has got a base of people here that I think would order, actually, and again, I don't know how much this costs and whether it would be a good idea to do it, but for a lot of their shows, if they just put them up online, again, I'm not sure what price would work if you put, you know, I think it's $9, something like that now, $9 or $10, if you can make it like just a little bit less or something like that and put all your shows up there leading to the pay-per-view, the taped pay-per-view that you do. I think that's something that they could actually do, and I would be into, because, again, the TV I have in my office is the same size as my computer monitor in here. I have a big computer monitor, so watching these types of things online don't bother me at all. And in fact, I'm really looking forward to doing it tonight.
On our update on the Royal Rumble poster, no one knows. No one has any idea who the man is, second from the top on the, second from the top and on the far left on the bottom. And I am leaning towards Edge for the bottom left. I still have no idea who the top guy, second guy from the top between Orton and Rey Mysterio is. And apparently no one else on the board does either.
Maybe that's why Donna Goldsmith is leaving. She finally saw the poster on Friday and said, look, I don't even know these people anymore, and just quit.
These men are indistinguishable. It's awesome.
And not dashing.
Not to mention the fact that on this, I guess this doesn't necessarily mean they would be in the Rumble, but several of these guys aren't in the Rumble. Miz, for example. All right, let's do some of the questions here, then we'll get into some more news, including the Strikeforce review from last night. This person wants to know, any news on an injury to James Storm? I was at Wembley for the January 29th show after the Beer Money match. Storm had to be helped to the back by two trainers. This wasn't a work because there was no part of the match where his leg was being worked over. Just wondering if he's okay or does he have an injury? I don't know, because I know that he did this on another one of the shows of the tour. I got a report several days ago that he supposedly got hurt, and then now there's a report that the same thing happened in Wembley, so that would lead one to believe that he's not hurt. But I don't know. I guess we shall find out. I actually asked around several days ago, is James Storm hurt, and I heard nothing, and then he continued to work, so I don't know the answer to that question. I guess we shall find out, but that's the last thing they need right now is another guy getting hurt or not being with the company for the next couple of days, which brings us to Booker T and Kevin Nash doing WWE. As we mentioned in the first hour, they were supposed to be part of They with TNA, and now TNA has got no They. So what would you do as far as bringing back the Main Event Mafia, I believe they were called, without Booker T, without Kevin Nash? Kurt Angle's supposed to be fired. You know, I guess, you know, the idea is Sting, but, you know, at this point, God knows. WWE may have him wrapped up as well for the Hall of Fame, for all I know. And by the way, that's merely speculation. I don't know anything. But what would you do?
I have no idea. Obviously, I would try to attach my wagon to Sting, but, I mean, I'm sure WWE has had to send some feelers out to Sting for this year. You say, okay, could they get desperate enough to do Scott Hall? Well, is it possible that Triple H is the one that inducts Shawn Michaels and the outsiders actually go into the Hall of Fame? It would make sense. Or, you know, a possibility of the NWO. I mean, it's possible. And realistically, what could Scott Hall actually bring to the equation anyway there? It's not going to be Batista, I wouldn't believe. I'm not sure what the, you know, what about Scott Steiner? I mean, is he still out there? Is there a possibility of him? I mean, it's... I guess I don't know what I would do. I guess the only thing they could do, if you get Sting, you just mobilize him around a bunch of other people that are already there and not being used that great. And I guess it could be a good idea that if James Storm is actually hurt and not in the mix at all, because what is They right now? It's like one dude. It's Crimson, and that's it. And with these, you know, what is actually going to make an impact here anyway? I have no idea.
You know, it is interesting, and I don't know, but, you know, the first thing Kevin Nash does when he's going to appear on WWE TV is he dyes his hair brown. You know?
hey, they don't want any, you know, silver foxes on there. And, yeah, I mean, every time he's done that, because he's, you know, stated numerous times his wife likes his hair being that way. He always wanted to grow into just having that old dude character, and he's got a great head of hair anyway, and it looked fine silver in TNA. So, yeah, he said it's for filming a movie, I believe, was his line. But, yeah, I don't think so. So, I would assume he is. And again, because it is Atlanta, and because of politics and all of that other stuff, I would not fall over shocked. And the footage and DVDs and all the stuff you could have there, I'm not going to fall over shocked if the Outsiders of the NWO actually gets inducted this year.
It's actually not a bad idea at all.
You know, it would make sense. I mean, it makes sense all the way across the board as far as the marketing and the sales. And I mean, I can guarantee you, I would assume this year there wouldn't be the 5-minute limitation that was put on, like, the Funks and that they've been doing with they cut off speeches. I don't think that's going to be an issue this time around.
Well, never put it past them. I don't even know if I have Hall of Fame tickets this year, because a buddy of mine that was going to buy them, my buddy Craig, screwed up on the the time difference. So he got in there late, but he thinks he has a guy. But the point is, you know, I had no interest in doing the Hall of Fame, and when Sean was announced as going in, it was kind of like, you know, I'd really like to see that. But then, as a person who has gone the last few years, I thought, do I really want to see Shawn Michaels do a 4-minute speech about his career? Not really. I mean, I don't know. They need to. I realize that Ric Flair talked too long in their opinion, but you know, everybody that was there, I mean, we weren't bored. I mean, it was awesome. He could have talked all night. And that's what the Hall of Fame should be, that these guys can go out there and talk about their careers all night. The people that show up are the hardcores. I don't care about your stupid USA Network show that has to be cut down to an hour. You know, do the Hall of Fame on Friday night, and you have a full day to butcher that thing up. Let everybody have a good time on Friday night.
Exactly. Or I mean, I know the tradition of, like, you know, you always have the biggest name at the end or something like that. But, I mean, realistically, if they're that worried about it and they need to do it at the same time or do it on Saturday or however it works, just have the main ones first so you have more time to edit the thing up before 11 o'clock comes around and it airs on USA. Now with the possibility of not going to this, does this increase your chances of going to, like, the bagels and breakfast thing that they always have? Bagels and biceps and breakfast or whatever it is.
Yeah, the bagels, biceps, and brunch. I can't remember what it's called, but I'm going to Mania. It's going to be fun. I just don't know about the Hall of Fame. We'll see how it goes this year. Matt here says, wondering whether you think the WWE pay-per-view buy rates will fall again this year, or whether you believe they've already hit their lowest numbers possible. Also, do you have any thoughts on what could be done to rectify the problem? Personally, I believe they need to scale back on all the comedy skits, start taking their product far more seriously, need to rethink their whole philosophy of building up their pay-per-view main events. Why not air training videos and sit-down interviews with the stars, talking about the importance of the upcoming match? I've written about this for years. I've got 18 million figure fours all with the same story, saying the same exact thing, because the same stupid thing keeps going on every month. You just, number one, you've got to make these pay-per-views important, and you've got to, I mean, it sounds simple, and really it is if you just try, but you've got to go through and find all the things that make your pay-per-views unimportant, and you need to eliminate those, and you need to go through and find all the things that make your pay-per-views important, and you need to do that more often. And they need to stop doing these pointless stipulations. They need to stop killing stipulations. They need to stop changing the titles on every single show. They need to stop pulling the rug out from under people. I mean, I could go on and on for hours about what needs to be done. And based on the idea that whoever wins the Rumble this year may not, in fact, end up headlining WrestleMania. They may do the twist and turns they did a couple of years ago on the way to Rumble, going through Elimination Chamber on the way to WrestleMania. And we may not see the winner actually get his shot at WrestleMania. And if they do that, all they've done is kill yet another stipulation. And it's the oldest, longest-lasting, biggest stipulation match that they have. So we'll see what happens, but I don't have faith, and I do think that the 2011 numbers will be lower than 2010. We'll get Mike's thoughts when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking WWE pay-per-view buy rates, and Mike, are they going to be lower in 2011 than they were in 2010, or are things going to magically turn around?
No, I think they'll be lower. And as far as them being able to get lower, what is the non-ECW drag down baseline is somewhere between, what, 200, 210? I mean, is it lower than that at this point? Is it 180? I mean,
the baseline?
I mean, it can always go down.
Oh, we're
it can always
talking.
Go down, no matter what WrestleMania and Royal Rumble do, even if they stay the same. And I would assume, actually, that realistically, both really could. I think WrestleMania is actually going to be down, which, again, is not going to be a shock.
Mike, we're talking shows that are doing 130 international.
Well, there you go. I mean, yes. I mean,
that's ridiculous.
God, that's terrifying. That is scary, scary stuff. That is really scary. Jesus. If they're down that low and they can actually, and again, they can drop. And it's not like people throughout this year aren't going to figure out a way to again, wait till Monday to find out what happens because things aren't important and stipulations don't matter. Streaming and bootlegging of these shows, which the UFC has tried to do a proactive strike with, even though it's ultimately going to fail because it always does. The only thing you can do is try to make it difficult on people and try to get your pound of flesh where you can. But again, that's not good. If the fourth quarter was an issue for WWE, imagine what. And again, the first quarter is going to be spiked up because the Elimination Chamber is, and the whole march to WrestleMania. It's amazing. Every year after WrestleMania, they go into that malaise, and it makes absolutely no sense. Summer's not your best time for professional wrestling anyway. It's amazing how they have not been able to come out of WrestleMania with any steam whatsoever. They blow the wad and that's it. And with numbers that low, yeah, they could continue to get lower. But odds are, because of Royal Rumble, I think probably staying pat and then doing well enough in the first couple of pay-per-views, they'll probably do the same thing they've done every other year, which is just put it in cruise control and go, well, that was pretty good.
Let me actually look at the key performance indicators. I may have been a little bit wrong. I know that they've done. Let me actually get the exact numbers here. They may not be as bad as 130 worldwide. I know they've done
a
couple.
December
like
to dismember the like 90,000 or 80,000.
Yes, it was. It might have even been lower than that. Let's see here. We're looking at about 200,000. International, so you're looking at about 130. I was right, except I was wrong. About 130 domestic is what you're looking at, and certain numbers actually we've done below that. You're looking at about 140 for bragging rights, which would have been under 100,000 domestic. So you're looking at 100,000 domestic or less for bragging rights, Night of Champions, Money in the Bank, and Fatal 4-Way all look to have done under 100,000 or right around 100,000 domestic.
Well, you know what the biggest problem with all of those shows is, don't you? The name.
It must be
the name. It can't be anything other than that. I mean, much like the Survivor Series, again, that apparently looks like it's going to tank, and it's got to be because of the name. We need a new concept.
Yeah,
I love how the Elimination Chamber did work. Money in the Bank is still up for grabs. As a match, it was fine. As a pay-per-view idea, I thought it, you know, stinks. You know, but they've had the Elimination Chamber, and that's it. And they keep throwing all this other stuff against the wall where, much like TNA, if you actually can, like, WWE can still do professional wrestling and book professional wrestling and have it make sense and still do sports entertainment as well. TNA can do that. They've proven they've not been able to do that because they won't get rid of Russo, but still. I mean, it's not that hard. There's nothing left to do now with business continuing to drop besides do professional wrestling to get people emotionally invested and give them a reason to spend their money. It's not like people don't spend money on pay-per-views. UFC shows this. Major boxing events still show this. Even the ones that aren't that major. I mean, you know, Pacquiao or Cotto and Mayorga is probably going to do 100,000, which isn't great. But it's a test, you know, it's going to be more people that buy a lot of WWE pay-per-views apparently this year, too. I mean, give people a reason to spend money. They'll spend it on you if you give them a reason to. For Christ's sakes, give them a reason to. Stop with all of this other concept stuff and trying to figure out what idea can come next and just go back to what works. Although, again, like you said before the break, you've written this a million trillion times. It's too bad because it's just, again, with the movies that have dragged everything down, with everything that's dragged everything down, WWE, the one thing that they could actually still do is some professional wrestling logic that's not a bad idea. When, again, you'll see it with UFC, now that they've begun to tape The Ultimate Fighter, and much like Nick Diaz last night, MMA out-pro wrestling is pro wrestling by positioning the same stuff that made professional wrestling great for years. And it's okay to have some of that once in a while, especially with numbers like that. At what point do you, well, I guess we'll have to see. At what point do you give up? But they won't.
What are your thoughts on Strikeforce last night?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was really good. And I'm, you know, I one of those people that always just bomb them for, you know, little production things and not having interviews and not being able to really drive home the point of their upcoming shows and everything. And they did all that last night. Plus, it was an exciting show. So it's, again, it's not going to be the most memorable show in history. I don't think people, you know, a year from, you know, 2 years from now will be going, hey, you remember that show? But it was a very great step forward, I thought. I thought it was just a really good show. Really good TV show.
Nick Diaz beat Mr. Cyborg in the main event. It was a interesting fight in the sense that Cyborg was taking it to him with leg kicks in that first round, and he turned it into a fight. And Diaz, if you listen to some of his pre-fight promos, I don't think he was taking this fight as seriously as perhaps he should have, and I'm sure that his legs today are telling him he should have taken it more seriously and checking some of the leg kicks. But he ended up getting taken down in the second round, which also he was probably losing on the scorecards. And as soon as Cyborg took him down, he immediately armbarred Cyborg and got the win. So, hell of a performance by Nick Diaz. The place went nuts for him, and it was a fun main event.
Yeah, and that's just the kicks he checked for the most part in that first round. He got his lead right leg just absolutely demolished, but continued to stand in there and took some hard punches, too. I mean, I had the round even because Cyborg truly did dominate for really the first, what, 3 minutes and 30 seconds of the round with those leg kicks and landing some good hard shots. And again, Diaz's chin is great, but there were a few of them that obviously he most certainly felt. But he just completely turned around the last minute and a half of that round and did a lot of damage, knocked Cyborg on his butt, and really ended up evening up the round. And in that second round, too, Santos tried the same thing again. And Diaz, again, just... the man has no fear of a lot of things, which is, you know, I guess to his detriment in life sometimes. But went right down there, on the ground with Cyborg, didn't panic, and just, you know, got an armbar. That was a real surprise. And then, of course, you had the obligatory Diaz brothers moment afterwards, where, you know, it was just Nick this time, but went over, flicked somebody off, said something to someone in the crowd. As Cyborg Santos was shown on TV crying, which was even though it sounds terrible to say that this woman was crying after seeing her man get beat up, it was perfect TV for somebody that everybody likes anyway. So that actually ended up pretty good. But you had beer thrown in the ring, and just it was, you got no great commentary from Diaz afterwards. He was actually quite calm and, you know, cut a nice promo and everything, didn't call anybody out or say anything rude or anything like that, but you always have to have some sort of moment when it comes to a Diaz fight.
And then we had the Jacare Souza Robbie Lawler title fight, and Lawler took it to him in the first round as well and staggered him with some shots, but then he got tired and Jacare Souza beat the stuffing out of him. Just, well, I shouldn't say that. He dominated him completely on the ground in every conceivable way, and Lawler had nothing. And the second round was even more one-sided. Some people gave it a 10-8 round. Just dominated the guy and tapped him out with a rear naked choke that Robbie didn't even defend. And aside from getting rocked in the first round, Souza looked great.
Yeah, actually, I had Lawler actually winning the first round a little bit, but obviously had Jacare cruising after that quite well. But it's, yeah, I mean, they had the little poll on there again. What do people want to see next as far as another Grand Prix goes, and the middleweight one won it. You know, we could get Jacare and Mayhem again. I would not fall over shocked if that happens. They've already fought twice now. Jacare won the first one. I think the second one was a no contest. So it's a possibility you get that again, too. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what they do next with him. But again, it was a really good fight, and Lawler, he got to the point in that fight where it was just like, you know what, I just can't do anything with this man, I'm out of here.
And they did a hell of a job, I thought, promoting the upcoming heavyweight tournament. They had names, they had dates, they had brackets, they had interviews. It was the best job of promotion that Strikeforce has done for an upcoming show in a long time.
Yeah, I know some of that fault goes to Showtime, too, but you know what? They did. They had the interviews there with Werdum, who's beaten both guys. They should actually hype that up a lot more, and the fact that he has beaten both Fedor and Overeem. I don't, you know, the general fan probably doesn't know that, or the casual MMA fan doesn't really know that. They probably know he beat Fedor, but wouldn't you should really drive that point home, too, and that they did it, again, they did a good job with that.
I wanted to make mention very quickly of the passing of Sean McGrath, a former WWE. He was under developmental contract. He worked with Ohio Valley for a while, and he took his own life. And in fact, he had sent a suicide note to a number of different people. And one of them, Stacy Carter, who was one of his friends, ended up posting it on Facebook. And obviously a lot of controversy about whether or not it should have been posted. But I don't know. I read it, and it was sad.
Yeah, I don't have Facebook, so I didn't see it, but I know Les Thatcher, and he, one of the guys who helped train him, he's really broken up over this, and just never good when this happens. Just very sad.
Did Les get a chance to read it, and what were his thoughts?
I'm not sure yet. I'm going to be talking to him this week. I know he's got the Wrestling Weekly show up with Doc Young up on the website now. I haven't had a chance to hear it yet, but I'm going to listen to that, and then I'll be talking to him on Wednesday night on the Georgia Wrestling History show.
Well, our condolences, of course, to Les and everybody that knew him, and always a tough thing when stuff like this happens, especially when in some ways perhaps it had to do with not making it in WWE. So we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we'll take more email questions. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Couple of quick news notes here before we get into some email questions. First off, last night, Herschel Walker, his second pro fight. Looked great. The man's my hero.
Guy is just awesome. And the fact that, you know, again, not a whole lot of experience in training in MMA so far of the, you know, the last 2 years. And the two fights he's had, but took a head kick, pissed him off a lot, and smacked around Scott Carson, landed only a one punch, but had Carson reeling. He was a little bit off balance, had him reeling, jumped on top of him, and ended up finishing the fight not too much longer after that. 48 years old, looking like that. Terrifying. It's amazing. He's down to doing 750 push-ups a day.
That's right. Well, you know, he's 48 now.
That's, well, you're getting up there in years, and you're just not what you used to be, even though you can still run a 4.38 40-yard dash.
All right, let's get into some of the email questions here. This person wants to know, what do you and Mike think Vince McMahon's favorite time in the business would be? Would it automatically be the Austin years when the company was making such big profits, or was there another time in the past 25-plus years that he would look back on more fondly? It's hard to say. I think, obviously, the times of his greatest success, the Austin era, the early years of Hulkamania, I would say that those would have to be very high up there. And I don't know. Maybe I would say probably the Austin era, because the Austin era also gave him the opportunity to actually be a pro wrestler, which he had always wanted to be, and which when he started out, his father said, "You will not be." And so I would think that he probably had a heck of a lot of fun playing pro wrestler.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. And the fact that he was able to expand his empire out so much and to TV the XFL, even though that was a failure, but he was, you know, he was at the height of his media in a lot of ways, too. And it let him do so many other things. It just, yeah, that, to me, and the satisfaction of bearing Turner, too, buying up ECW, buying up WCW, having the libraries, finally pretty much getting what he wanted as far as, you know, ultimate full control of the industry. Yeah, I think that's it, because as great as those Hulk Hogan years were and everything, I mean, the pressure of trying to build that thing up, it just obviously that had to be great satisfaction, but to me it would probably have to be those years because of just everything that went into it and the gigantic, gigantic sums of money that were made.
This person says, one of the things that makes MMA special and exciting to me is the fact that you do not know who's going to be the victor between two fighters. Sure, you can use logical information to come to a conclusion on who is who is favored of being the winner, but doesn't mean it's locked. Do you feel in order to make WWE exciting to watch again, the bookie needs to become more unpredictable in terms of win-loss? This would also mean the structure of the match as well, finishers being used sparingly, etc. Actually, no. The deal with MMA is that if you have an upset, if you have a guy win who was not expected to win, then that plays into future storylines. For example, if somebody beats Brock Lesnar in a number one contenders match, then Brock Lesnar is not going to get the championship match. Whereas in WWE, guys lose number one contendership matches all the time, and they still get championship matches. The problem is not you know who is going to win in WWE, or you don't know who is going to win. The problem is that the wins and losses mean nothing in wrestling, and they mean everything in MMA. And, you know, that's in fact one of the criticisms of Strikeforce of late has been that wins and losses mean nothing when you can come off losses and get a championship match. I mean, a lot of people have brought stuff like that up. So, you know, it's not so much that you know who's going to win in WWE because no one knows who's going to win the Rumble. Nobody knows who's going to win any of the matches today. The problem is that the wins and losses when they occur don't matter. You know, I mean, why? At this point, I know there have been many arguments on many shows. I'm not going to bring it up again about the UFC match where if so-and-so wins, he gets the championship match. But if the other guy beats him, the other guy doesn't get the match. I don't want to argue about that again. But seriously, why is Dolph Ziggler getting a championship match at this point? He's lost over and over again. He's been laid out by everybody. At this point, the idea that he's getting a championship match is ridiculous. That's the problem with wrestling today. Not that you know who is or who is not going to win. I don't know who's going to win tonight, if it's going to be Dolph Ziggler or Edge. But I do know that it's stupid. That's what I do know.
Yeah, wouldn't the average person watching that just, you know, seeing it build up, just would think, you know, dude sucks? So unless you're going to do something like, you know, what would be, you know, an idea of having him win the Royal Rumble or winning the title tonight, I mean, again, as impotent as that is, you would just have to look and say, well, just the dude sucks. Why would I care about him if he's not in the mix? He's been made to look like a fool. You know, it's not how pro wrestling, it's not the stories. A lot of the stories are pretty much always the same, you know, over the years. It's just how you tell it. And, you know, how you frame the perception of it. And it just, again, in WWE, it's not that hard to do that for them. Why they don't do it, I don't know. They've done it at times, you know, Nexus being the one of the last great examples. I don't understand. I really don't.
In fact, quite frankly, we'd have to go back and look, but I think that in the big main event MMA matches, it's sometimes those finishes are more predictable than the finishes of Major League Pro Wrestling matches.
Because
Nine times out of ten, the pro wrestling finishes don't make any sense. And, I mean, you can usually successfully predict who's going to win a high-level MMA match. And obviously, you'll have upsets here and there. But I think the upsets are fewer in MMA than they are in pro wrestling if you look at things logically.
Yeah, but you've whipped people into a frenzy. I mean, you know, Mayweather and Hatton. It was almost, again, unfathomable, you know, that people could think that Ricky Hatton could beat Floyd Mayweather, but because of the 24/7 series and how they were portrayed in the story that got told, they whipped people into an absolute frenzy. There was a frenzy. There was a million people that bought that pay-per-view in England, if I'm not mistaken, and look how many came over here and spent money and came over to Vegas and just flooded Nevada. I mean, they had people losing their minds over that fight, and it's just, again, it's how the story got told, and it's not that hard to do sometimes, you know? It doesn't always have to be good guy, bad guy. It's just two people you want to see punch each other in the face.
Kevin says in the Warrior DVD, there is a flash of a paper advertising Vader versus Warrior for the WWF title. Since neither won the title, who was supposed to win? There had to be more than just a small thought if they were going so far as to advertise it. Actually, they made that up for the DVD to bury Warrior. I think that was during the period where they said that he no-showed an event or something of that nature, and that was not a real advertising. WWE made it up in 2008 for the DVD to try to make Warrior look bad.
Yeah, that was just a phony poster, and I can't remember, was it Flair Vader? I can't remember what was actually supposed to be on there or what they had actually taken it from, but I know somebody had found that too, which is actually somewhere buried in the forum somewhere, actually on the website.
This person says, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I thought I would go ahead and pass it along. Alex Riley on his Facebook page is claiming that Papa Shango will be in tonight's Royal Rumble. Actually, Wade Barrett on his Twitter also said that Papa Shango was going to be in the Royal Rumble. So I don't know if Papa Shango is going to be in the Rumble or if this is now a running joke that has gone viral in WWE. But that's the story.
Well, it would be more believable right at this point than having the Godfather in there.
Sure. All right. My board name is Smark Henry. That's a good name, by the way. I have a question regarding the drug interactions that I don't seem to have seen addressed by the media very often. In particular, my question is in regards to the effects of cocaine and steroids, HGH, being used simultaneously. Do you know if there have been any medical studies done to see if their combined use could lead to an increased chance of a heart attack? Seems to me many of the younger wrestlers who have died of a heart attack in recent years have also had publicized past problems with cocaine abuse. Do you feel the combination of a heart enlarged by artificial means combined with a drug that can cause arrhythmia could have led to many untimely deaths? Actually, it did. There have been, I know that Kurt Hennig's, his doctor said that he had damaged his heart, and so a smaller amount of cocaine than perhaps would have killed a normal person killed him. And obviously, it's hard to do studies on this because that would require you getting together a bunch of human beings and saying, we're going to shoot you up with steroids and growth and have you take cocaine and see what it does to your heart. Can't really do that. But you can see guys that have been heavy steroid and HGH users and heavy cocaine users who have died of heart attacks. And yes, it appears that there is a very direct link there. So that's the best answer that I can give you.
Yeah, and not a whole lot to add to that. You know, steroids, I guess there's a debate over that, but HGH, you know, as far as the growth of arteries and stuff like that, and obviously cocaine is way out, you know, laid out there pretty good of what that can do to you. So, yeah, it's just, I'm sure these things all actually go hand in hand. They usually always do. It's never really one thing. Oftentimes when it comes to a wrestler, it's, you know, it's been a, like Eddie Guerrero and many others, a history of what they've done to their bodies that just all adds up.
This person wants to know about Mystico. Do you think with the signing of Mystico, will they market him as something other than Mystico, especially without the mask? I think for sure he's getting a new name. I'm not sure about the mask. Thing with the mask is they don't want a lot of masked guys, and they've got Rey. And, you know, they wanted to, you know, Stephanie wanted to take the mask off Ultimo Guerrero because she thought he was a handsome man, and it was ridiculous for him to be wearing this mask.
Dragon,
yeah. What did I say? Oh, Guerrero, yeah. Ultimo Dragon. But, I mean, if the idea is that he's going to be the eventual successor to Rey Mysterio, then the idea would be to keep the mask on him, because then when Rey is gone, you can market tons and tons of masks. So, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I mean, obviously, when Alberto Del Rio got called up, he insisted in magazines that he was not going to be taking his mask off. Insisted. I will not go if I must unmask. First thing he did was unmask. So, and obviously with him, it's been of great benefit. His facials are awesome. But with Mystico, I don't know. It will depend. I mean, maybe they'll think he looks like a little kid. Maybe they'll think that they want to market masks. There's no way of knowing what they're going
to
decide.
What's the point of him being there other than to turn into Spike Dudley and get thrown around by everybody if the mask isn't on him? That's one where I can understand it with Del Rio and with a lot of other guys. Okay, I can't really understand it, but I understand what their thinking is of it. When it comes to Mystico, at his size, he is a little dude. I mean, at his, you know, at 5'6", there's no way. They have that with Evan Bourne as it is. I can't fathom that one. Changing the name, sure. I'm sure they're going to have to do that for marketing purposes and all that sort of stuff. But taking the mask off of him would be just sheer insanity.
Person wants to know, after the 97 Survivor Series screw job, why wasn't Owen released like everyone else? Number one, they didn't want to release him, and they promised that he was going to have a feud with Shawn Michaels and get the better of it, and that's not what happened.
No, they brought him back. I think he had the one thing on Raw where he attacked Vince McMahon during a promo or something like that. But, yeah, it didn't take long after that. And again, how much of that was just spite, too?
And Brett strongly encouraged him to stay as well. In fact, he was encouraging everybody to stay, but some insisted that they left, and WWE let them go. Booker T, or not Booker T, just reading another question about Booker T. Davey Boy Smith, for example. Will Nash and Booker stick around and appear on Raw, or is this basically a one-off like when Van Damme came in for the Rumble? I think they're in for a while just because I expect them to be involved with the WrestleMania Atlanta weekend, because obviously there's going to be a WCW tie-in, and, you know, They could put all of the click, with the exception of like of Waltman, into the Hall of Fame. Like you mentioned, the outsiders could go in as well. Shawn Michaels could be the semi-main this year. So I expect them to be around for a little while.
And, you know, let's say Henning Goldust and Venus, when they came back too. With those guys, Booker T maybe not, but I mean, it would just be hard for me to think that they wouldn't be in the mix in some aspect for at least a couple of weeks, at least obviously leading into WrestleMania.
A couple of more here before we go to the break. With the news Booker and Kevin are returning at the Rumble, what are the odds one of them is given the role as the anonymous GM? That is possible. They are. It seems that they're getting ready to blow that thing off. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Kevin Nash were the GM, to be honest with you. What are your thoughts?
I've hated the whole thing. It's going to be interesting to see how they maneuver Michael Cole out of that mix, too. I mean, that's going to be kind of interesting too. What happens now with Michael Cole? Does he stay just heel announcer? Do they let that drop too? How much of a role is he going to play in this whole thing ultimately? Although, to be honest, with Tough Enough coming up,
we're nearly out of time.
I'm not sure when the show is going to be. I could see them actually drawing it out to Steve Austin too. You do have a way now.
Actually, Mike, we're at the break. We'll talk about this when we get back. Okay. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking about the idea of Kevin Nash perhaps coming in as the anonymous GM. I personally think great idea. I'd much rather see him speaking and working a GM role than actually in the ring wrestling. And, Mike, you were tying this into Tough Enough.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't fall over shocked. I don't think it'd be all that bad of an idea if it's Steve Austin. I know that, you know, you would look at some of the things that have happened a lot of times. It would make no logical sense whatsoever. But I think early on when Michael Cole started doing that stuff, he did do the "oh, hell yeah" thing, obviously, is a big tease. But I guess you could close it up with that, too, and explain anything he had with Nexus away with, you know, there's a million one. It doesn't matter. If Steve Austin's saying it, I have a feeling that people will buy it enough just to get the thing over with.
It is the beginning of the road to WrestleMania. It starts today with the WWE's second biggest pay-per-view of the year, the Royal Rumble, a 40-man over-the-top battle royal, guys entering at presumably 90-second intervals. We've also got three title matches, Edge versus Dolph Ziggler, Randy Orton versus Miz, and Lay Cool versus Natalya. It's all coming up here. It starts as soon as this show goes off the air. If you want to follow along with Dave Meltzer on the front page, you can do so at WrestlingObserver.com. He's going to be doing live running play-by-play of the event. And later on tonight, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be back with a brand new radio show. We're going to be talking about all of the matches on the show. We'll run down the Rumble and all of the eliminations, and we may have a decent idea of where they are going for WrestleMania. And if not, tomorrow night is Raw. I'm sure they'll have a follow-up to the Rumble, and we'll get some more presumed matches for WrestleMania. We're going to be talking about those as well. Also at WrestlingObserver.com, so make sure you check that out. Next week, we've got a brand new show. TNA is gearing up for their next pay-per-view. They've got their big event coming up Thursday with the debut of They, several of which, at least two of which, are currently with WWE as we speak. So it's going to be a very interesting story to cover. We got a lot of stuff coming up, so make sure you check it out. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go, and we'll be back here live next week with a brand new program. So thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.